Hello, and welcome to At Your End Step. My name is Morgan. I'm here with Mike.
Hello.
And Jordan.
Hello.
Yeah, we have another fun-filled episode for you folks this week. Jordan, thank you so much for stopping by and being a guest on the show. How's it feel to be back?
Oh, it feels great. I'm excited to talk about magic today. Some fun stuff's been going on. Standards are robust.
Really selling it.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. You want to do another take? Is this all right, now this time, smile.
Yeah. Everyone's got oops. It's all right.
Everybody's got oops.
But we do have a lot of stuff to talk about. So before we get things started, though, I do want to give a quick shout out to all of our patrons. So if you are interested in joining our Patreon, it's patreon.com/atyourendstep. They help us produce the show, keep the lights on, get the show up and running, and pay for things like our hosting, our custom domain, everything like that. So we really appreciate everything they do for us every show. So thank you so much. And again, if you are interested in joining, it's patreon.com/atyourendstep. So we have a few community topics to discuss here real quick. The first one is actually going to be real quick. We have a banner restricted announcement, and it was no changes to any format, which I don't think it's surprising for any of the like GP staple formats, right? So it's not really that surprising for standard, for modern, for legacy or anything like that. I think for Pauper, I think they're kind of missing the boat, right?
Yeah, but normally with those formats, it takes them a while to get there. But yeah, Arkham's Astrolabe has got to be on the hot seat for sure.
You would think. It's definitely, obviously, the key card of the format at this point in time. Every deck is basically an Astrolabe deck to some degree.
Yeah, there's no reason for it not to be. Yeah.
The whole community is really mad about this, too.
Yeah.
I forgot proper players existed until Astrolabe didn't get banned, and they're definitely vocal about it now.
I still have my box of Pauper decks, and I told Morgan before that, like, it's like, I'm just gonna not change it, and hopefully I'll catch up with the ban eventually.
So, how much is Astrolabe?
Astrolabe itself is not an expensive card.
No, it's...
But it just it's really like warped the mana and just like changed.
No, sure.
You know, Prophetic Prism was a staple in the format already, and the simple fact that you can now play that effect at one mana, it's also it's also made basic lands just unplayable in Pauper. You just have to play snow lands, so that's weird. It's weird to just have a format where Modern's kind of like that now too, where it's like there's almost no reason to not play snow lands, which is weird, but
yeah, they're just all available. They're very cheap, so it's just like why not,
right? I thought it was at least interesting with the ban of restricted announcement, though, that they did not. Normally, we'll get maybe an announcement where they say that they're looking at some cards or something's on a watch. And I was surprised like for them not, maybe I guess not super surprised, but Astrolabe being one of them, but Modern definitely Mox Opal. As Wurz is starting to take over the format, and I've already started to see the Jeskai Ascendancy decks. Jeskai Ascendancy as a card has started to go up a little bit, too, with the inclusion of Emery. Emery with Jeskai Ascendancy and two Mox Opals is a infinite combo.
Right.
It makes that deck real consistent. So I am interested to see if Modern gets a look at for that. And Standard, we're going to talk about a little bit later, but there might be flags. You know, red ones.
Right.
Big red ones.
Big red flags.
Next up here that we wanted to talk about is Extra Life 2019. So Wizards and Magic the Gathering is kind of going a little bit all out for Extra Life this year. And they have a couple different things that you can kind of take a look at.
Morgan, what is Extra Life?
So Extra Life is basically a charity that is sort of nationally held. You can actually join up locally and have your... and pick where you want your proceeds to go. So people join, say they're going to do this fundraiser, and then a lot of people do like streaming sessions or like board game, what's the word I'm looking for here? Weekend long events, sort of like
So it's like Race for the Cure, but board gaming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The definition, like Extra Life, is an event for specifically aimed at the Children's Miracle Network hospitals.
But yes,
but like Morgan said, you can play for your individual hospital, which is pretty cool.
So Wizards of the Coast this year is going to be, their Extra Life is going to be benefiting the Seattle's, Children's Hospital. And you have multiple ways that you can go, and help. So they're going to be kind of doing a crossover here with My Little Pony. So they're going to have similar to when you had the Grimlock card, the Nerf Blaster card, and then I forget what the third card in that was.
Was it Hot Wheels?
I can't remember.
It wasn't Hot Wheels. Was it Hot Wheels? I don't remember.
I don't remember. Oh, it was Dungeons and Dragons. It was the sort of D&D.
Oh, we're good at this. Oh. Smart.
Wow. Yeah.
Smart boys.
Yeah. So similar to those crossovers and them being sort of in the silver bordered section, these My Little Ponies are the same thing. So we have Rarity, Princess Twilight Sparkle, and then Nightmare Moon being the three cards represented here. And this is kind of another kind of foray into that crossover that they have. I mean, obviously they're going to take advantage of the Hasbro sort of IPs that they have access to. So like, why not? I'm not going to read the cards or what they do. If that's something that you're interested in, definitely check it out.
I just have a problem with, they say any pony, and I couldn't wrap my mind around it until Morgan made it clear that like, that's like anybody.
So you have to think about it like, these cards are Magic cards inside of the My Little Pony universe. So like, ponies play them. So nope. When you play them,
they don't have thumbs.
Listen,
yeah, how do they
shuffle? I don't know how the thing
works. Have
to
call a judge to come
show? They're magical ponies.
Wouldn't the
man.
Judge,
wouldn't
be,
the
a
judge
pony
be a
too?
Pony too? I don't understand.
Hey, what's up? I'm a pony.
Yeah, how can I help you? Yeah, is that how it goes?
I think the nice thing about the set is that it's a $50 set, and they've confirmed that $30 from each set goes directly to the children's hospital.
Yes.
So like,
just costs.
Yeah, basically. Like it's like just like they try to like, you know, they're not making money off of this. You know, they are giving most of it away, which is pretty cool.
Right. They're also going to be offering play mats, and those will be available to purchase that through Hasbro Pulse, and they're going to be available October 22nd through November 5th. And you can get all three sets with all three playmats with the art on them. They're going to be uncut sheet auctions that are actually going to be on eBay. And there's going to be a bunch of streaming events that are going to be happening throughout the October 28th through November 1st. So there's definitely a lot that you can kind of take advantage of and look and see. There's going to be a creator campaign that they're going to be having codes for their audience for Inspiring Veteran, for Arena, for the actual premium card style. There's going to be sleeves.
Let's see, there's a whole shop of just cool stuff you can buy. If you
right.
Like, if you like My Little Pony stuff.
The Ajani sleeves are cool. The Shockland promos for
yes.
MTGO are amazing, and it
yes.
makes
those
me
really
sad
cool.
that Arena doesn't get those, because they could.
Ostensibly, I don't see like why
you just copy the art file to the other folder,
right?
And stop it.
So that I agree, that is something that I do wish you would get an Arena, since Shocklands are standard legal currently, but they are beautiful. So if you haven't checked those out, we got like these arts. They were data mined from an update a while back, so now we actually know how you can obtain them. But man, they're great. They're the kind of thing where it's like, I wish these were in paper. Like, I wish these, like, were...
Oh, absolutely.
Like, this is what, like, not to say expeditions weren't good, but this is, like, what you would want. This is, like, an expedition that I would actually, like, chase.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's really cool. You can get a, you know, again, all the money that you're donating, a large portion of it, if not all of it, goes to a good cause, and you get some nifty stuff for it. So definitely don't sleep on it. Check it out. And if you don't donate to, you know, WotC or Wizards, and you have another like local group that's doing it that you want to donate to, fully, you know, we endorse that as well. You know, there's a ton of like popular people that are going to be doing something for Extra Life this year. So definitely check out your favorite streamers and what have you, and see if you can donate how you want. All right. The last thing is Throne of Eldraine Deluxe Edition. It's a thing, and you may want it.
Like, it is sold out now. I want to at least mention that it was a thing that existed.
It's not surprising.
$50?
Yeah, and it sold out.
It's not surprising that it sold out, because with the fan base that Magic has created, and making something exclusive, making something limited as well, is going to make people desire it. It's going to make people want it, right? Like, that's just that's just how it is. Regardless, like, we already know, like, it already has these 16 like Throne of Eldraine collector boosters as being the big money item, right? So that, and knowing how like stores are, like what prices stores are selling those are at, like, you still are fine. You are buying 16 lottery tickets, which may or may not pay off.
Those are expensive lottery tickets, man.
They're
$2 scratchy at Speedway.
And potentially could win bigger. Yeah. Your odds aren't as great. I don't actually know, I guess, technically.
One in four tickets in Ohio. And
does that mean that, like, the game stores are going to start, like, putting pictures of, like, the good collector's pack opens? Just, like, when I go into the to the gas station, it's like, sold a $2,000 one. Like, ooh, I sold a foil extended Art Garrett collector's edition pack. Like, ooh, they got good packs here.
You got to take a picture of it and post it on the wall. So... You also get a bunch of other things. You get a set theme binder. You get a foil Garrett Cursed Husband Borderless Planeswalker card. You get an art print of the Borderless Planeswalker of the Garrick, which isn't exclusive to this product. You could just buy that separately, which is important to know. You get a non-foil version of the buy box promo, which is going to be the more rare version
I was gonna say, that's the most tilting thing in this box, because like Watsu plays coy on this, but they know.
Yeah, they 100% know. You also get a 3x3 strip from a foil sheet of Eldraine, which, okay.
You get 9 cards of the foil sheet?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Right. And you get a Magic Arena Mega Code, which grants a digital Garrick Exquisite Sleeve, one copy each of the following, plus a card style for each of Garrick the Cursed Huntsman, Charming Prince, the Magic Mirror, Witch's Vengeance, Bone Crusher Giant, and Questing Beast.
Who picked half these cards?
I don't know.
What these have in common.
Why isn't it just you get a copy of each mythic and the card style for each mythic? I would take that.
Well, no, this is significantly less cards than that. Yeah. So
I understand. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Here's the thing. Instead of putting like Oko, the face of your set on it, we'll get Witch's Vengeance.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, well, So Garrick is definitely being
Bone
like
Bone Crusher is actually a good one. That's gonna be a standard staple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Witch's Vengeance, isn't that the one where like a creature type gets -3/-3?
Correct.
No, I don't. Whatever. Great.
So this is one of those products that like if you know it's for you, like sweet, you probably bought it. And if it's
I want to bridge into that conversation.
Yeah.
So I maybe you could tell me, Jordan. I don't know because it's not me. And I don't think it's any of us here. Who is this product for? We know one of the purest collectors I've ever met.
I was going to say Keller came to mind, but he doesn't want it.
He doesn't. So. He doesn't. He's actively upset about the... if he wanted to actually get each of the cards in Eldraine, he has to get regular printing in the set, regular pack foil, pre-release stamp foil, non-foil extended art, foil extended art, and then he has to get the... promo one from the F&M packs,
right?
They have the planeswalker
symbol, and at least you're like rares and mythic rares and some uncommons technically.
Yeah, who knows,
because you'll have to get the F&M promos,
right? But I'm just saying, like, so I don't know, even like you, like what collector is this for?
I'm not really sure, because like the collector also doesn't care about the MTG arena code.
Nope.
Probably they probably don't care about a third of a foil sheet.
They definitely don't care about that.
Like,
well, that way they can meet up with nine friends
and cut it up. Yeah, even if that's even a third, I don't know. Actually, 9 of whatever, how many cards are in the set? There's no way that's the thing, right?
The only exclusive thing is the binder, which, okay, it's still just like a 9-pocket binder. Now Ultra Pro has a upgraded like collector's binder, right? That has four. It's 12 row binder.
Yeah.
Which they could have easily like upgraded that too and like made it a collector's product, right? Like, okay, I can display my full play sets or what have you. Maybe this is where I keep like all my Eldraine like rares or what have you. And you can still do it with this, but it's just like you can't even upgrade it to your most premium product that you have. Like,
well, no, that'd be $550.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. That's how they get you.
The art on this binder isn't even really like, I don't feel
and
special.
It's like, it's like leatherette. It's like not even like real leather.
Like, this is the
not saying that it should be real leather, but.
Yeah, it really is.
You could do a neat journal that like, you'd be like, oh, this is a witch's spell book. You know, like,
see,
you could do cool stuff like that.
So here's the thing, and here's why like Keller doesn't want it, right? Is because there's nothing like, card wise that is exclusive, because you can open a non-foil Kenrith in the collector's booster.
Right.
You can open a foil full art alt art Garrick in a collector's booster or regular booster. So there being nothing exclusive like the Mythic Editions had, which were way more value for a lower price point, and that was determined by the cards they're printing in it. Like, they knew what they were doing. They knew that they know of the secondary market, even though they don't, you know, choose to acknowledge it. So, like, you're not adding anything exclusive by releasing this except for a binder, and who cares?
I mean, here's the thing. I guess I won't begrudge them too much. They sold out of this.
They sold out of it, but that doesn't say anything because we don't know how many of these they made, right?
That's also true.
So if
they're for $650 on eBay right now,
and more, and like, so we're asking,
sold recently.
That's a good, yeah.
So we're asking who wants these. It's people who are afraid of missing out, right? It's the FOMO people who are like, I had a chance to buy that, and now it's like $1,000, and I didn't buy it. And I don't think anyone is, maybe the people that really wanted to go hard in the paint with collector's boosters because it was a guaranteed way to get like 16 of them, and those are going to be harder to obtain. So maybe it's those people, and they were just buying it because, hey, maybe I can buy this, get my, you know, pay basically a small premium for the collector's boosters, and then flip like the binder for 50 or something like that and make some of my money back, or I don't know.
If you bought this, I'm not begrudging you if you obviously were the person for this, but I do think it's just weird that like WotC keeps finding exotic ways to not really put good, like what I think is like a good collection of things into someone's hand. I also think that having seen them in practice and how they're, I think the collector's packs are also just kind of trash.
They're a big lottery ticket.
I shared a tweet from Ben Blyweiss who was like trying to like evaluate the price on like extended art cards that really aren't worth any money. You know, and don't get me wrong, some of the cards look cool. You know, I opened some packs, the storybook cards look great. They look amazing in foil. But I don't know, this delivery method is, I don't know. It just starts to feel like they're really, really trying to just like, they're always trying to suck my dollars out. You know, like just like open the wallet and you get the whole little, like, you know, just all the, I'm thinking literally of Luigi's Mansion here, like a vacuum sucking dollar bills out of things.
You're hungry for it. You want that Luigi's Mansion 3.
I do. I want it. But I guess like, I wanted to. I always want to feel like I'm getting either some kind of value out of this, or my experience is strong there. And I don't feel like, I don't know. We've had this conversation enough times where like we have all these lawsuits about like how loot boxes are damaging, and like Magic can only keep hiding the effect for so long. And it seems weird to me they just went harder in the paint on the loot box idea.
Oh, this is just like, we'll sell you a bunch of loot boxes, all of one big
$30 loot boxes. So yeah, it's not great.
Magic somehow has expertly dodged that. It's impressive, honestly.
It being physical, like you're getting physical property, probably makes it feel different to people.
Yeah, I mean that, and like I guess they tell you like, hey, these all have the same value,
right?
Even though like third market, you know,
and they are booster packs; they are additions to the game. Whereas the other things are ancillary items.
I know they aren't printed on the actual packs, but I imagine that somewhere they have listed the like odds of opening certain cards.
Yeah, they keep at least the foil odds in the packs.
Oh yeah,
the premium odds are on the packs.
Gotcha.
But
I'm sure in certain regions that's probably different too.
That's definitely for sure.
So I don't know. These premium products, they're fun, and like I don't seek them out necessarily. They're like, and it's different for like us because like we might seek out a pack to open it, you know, on like a tweet or something like that, just for fun, just to produce something and make something. So like we're even a little bit different than your typical average consumer. But I'm not like chomping at the bit to buy like a quote unquote box of these, because like the box itself, I don't know how many it actually has in it. But
it's 12, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very small amount. So it's just I don't know. I think it's cool that they do these alternate art things, and that's fun. And then I like that you can still open them in regular packs. Like, I think that's great. But like, what? I don't understand why we aren't encouraged more to just have that in regular booster packs. Other than like, it's just boldface, like I'm milking you. Like, it's just boldface capitalism. Yeah. And
eventually, like dust is going to come out of the udder. Like that's the only thing.
Yeah.
When you keep milking the cow that much, you know, eventually the cow's gonna be like, you know what?
I got nothing.
No more milk.
Yeah. So
powdered milk, and that's how you get powdered milk.
Figured
it
out.
For joining us on the How It Works podcast.
Farm wisdom. Farm wisdom.
I've never been more thankful to live in the city and fly the backbone of the agriculture world than right now.
All right. So that's going to be it for community before we move on to the competitive segment of the show. Do you want to go a quick shout out to our lovely sponsor, Comic Town? They're going to be holding Star City Games Regional Championships on October 19th of 2019 at the Courtyard Columbus West. This event is
I copy and pasted this from their event, so yes.
This event is capped at 300 players, and pre-registration is strongly encouraged.
So, strongly encouraged, but in all caps, is the weirdest thing. I'm sorry, Comic Town, we love you, but like, it is strongly encouraged.
You will comply!
You will be encouraged. Do you feel encouraged?
So the players meeting will start at 10 a.m. and it's going to be modern and it's going to be $40. So again, pre-registration is encouraged, and you can find out more about this event by going to worldofcomictown.com. All right. So competitive. We had our first Throne of Eldraine tournament. It was the Star City Games, teams open, in Philly. And so we had a constructed team event. So it's not necessarily the strongest indicator of what the format's going to actually look like, unfortunately. But we can derive some information from it. The team of Matthew Dilks, John Rossum, and Dale Ayers. So two of the three Amulet team. With John Rossum, or Awesome Rossum, as some may know him from his Twitter handle, took down the tournament, and they were playing in the modern seat. Unsurprisingly, we see Amulet Titan. In the standard seat, we see Bant Golos, and then in the legacy seat, we see Teemer Delver. So, all in all, we are not going to talk about Legacy unless Jordan or Mike have some amazing insights. The only thing I can see is that there's a lot of different lists and that Teemer Delver is kind of back again. So,
yeah, I could care less about the Legacy list.
Cool.
Like, Teemer Delver's good, yeah.
Pass.
Marina Bomberman list right now, that's the best thing I got going for me.
So, let's go ahead and knock out Modern real quick, if that's okay.
Yeah, we're going to be more standard focused today. So.
Right. So the one thing I did want to point out is we do see a new card in Amulet, which is Castle Garenbrig, and
it's
two copies of it, which isn't too like surprising. This is just another way you can have like a turn three Titan, pretty much, and with something like Amulet of Vigor, the downside may not even matter. But yeah, that does make 100% sense. And it's not surprising to see this kind of come back into play from not really being as prevalent as it was before. But, Matthew Dilks is one of the experts for the archetype. So it makes sense for him to be playing this in the modern seat and being successful with it. Also, Once Upon a Time is the other big get for this deck as a four of. And that's also not surprising. This is something that is great for zero mana. And you're pretty okay with casting it for two because it either gets you a land that you may need or Titan, or even something like a Souza. It's not surprising to kind of see that.
Yeah, weird. Free spells made it into modern.
Yeah.
Ooh, think of next.
Speaking of free spells, we are looking at the second place deck list next, which is Urza Outcome. This is the sort of new beast that Urza has allowed to exist.
This is scary. Urza no longer has to deal with poor mana for any reason.
No.
Which was like one of the things against it early on. Nope, now it's just pretty much blue.
For sure. And we knew that Embry was going to make these decks like even more busted. And we see Embry as a four of, just for the fact that it lets you be redundant, right? You can cast things out of your graveyard and most of the things in your deck cost nothing. They're all cost 0 to 1, as far as artifacts, because we have like Engineered Explosives, Chalice, Everflowing Chalice, Mishra's Bauble, Mox Amber, and Mox Opal. Then you have like Arkham's Astrolabe and Wishing Well showing up as sort of other cheaper artifacts that you can use to gain some sort of advantage, whether it just be like scrying and potentially drawing cards or just drawing a card from it entering the battlefield.
Oh yeah, you're never sacking Witching Will. Witching Will sits on the battlefield so you can return to paradoxical outcome. Yeah. You're not sacking
that. I mean, that's how you're drawing cards off of it, right?
Yep, that's true.
But the real big thing about this deck is it's a paradoxical outcome deck. If you're not familiar with this card, it's very busted in Vintage. There's whole Vintage archetypes built around this kind of card. And it's return any number of non-land permanents you control to their owner's hands. And then draw a card
for each one.
You control. I just want to make sure I said you control. Yes, can't. Yes. It's all stuff you control.
Yeah, you can't like give them the Witchclaw Talisman and then paradoxical outcome. No, that's probably when you just like desperately need to search for a single paradoxical outcome. Yeah, this deck is kind of everything that scares me a little bit. Not only Urza now gets to ditch the sword combo, which was always like it's been ever since it was unbanned in Modern. Really didn't do very much. Like people tried to push it, but Thopter Sword didn't do very much. Urza allowed it to happen, but the second that an Urza player gets like a better shot, at not having to play it, here we are. This deck is resilient to I think a lot more hate than the actual Thopter Sword version was. You can ostensibly play this deck and never even have an issue with something like Stony Silence.
Right? Yeah, or Collector Oof.
You don't need
to activate your artifacts.
Yeah, it literally doesn't matter. Here's the thing. Urza is what taps it for mana.
Right.
Right.
So you can still turn them into mana like without having to like activate. This is a busted deck, and I think like this is what's going to – this and another deck we're going to look at here, I believe, is going to really punishes Mox Opal. Emery's busted, but Mox Opal has been a problem. So
yeah, just for some time.
For what it's worth in terms of a cool interaction, you can't put Witchclaw Talisman on the stack and then Paradoxical Outcome.
So you can't do that. That's cool. But I'm assuming it's like you can do that, but it's also there just to like sometimes find the first one.
Oh yeah, sure.
You can definitely do that. Notice that this deck also has four Oko Thief of Crowns on the sideboard. So sometimes you just bring an Oko, and then you're like, "Here, you should have a Mox Amber. I'm gonna have
from me your to creature. You."
And I think that sounds like a fair trade. That sounds good to me.
And not to mention, it's a 3-mana Planeswalker, which we know is good Modern.
Takes up to 6 loyalty.
Correct.
And makes food.
It makes food, and it, sometimes like your plan B could just be 3/3s, right?
Well, it could be 3/3s. I think like food is also relevant in some matchups. You're just like, oh, here's this planeswalker. Do you want to try and kill it? Because I'm going to gain 3 life every turn.
Yeah.
So I hope your burn deck can beat me before eventually I'm drawing better than your draw for turn most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn 2 Oko in Modern is just as good as turn 2 Oko in Standard too. So
yeah, real good. So yeah, I think this deck is actively scary and may push Modern into a bad place, and it just came out of the bad place. We want to be in the good place final season.
It's not good. I don't think it's, I mean, the deck's good, but I don't think it's good for the deck's format.
Very, very good.
I think like when you hear that paradoxical outcome is like the deck is the thing that you should be doing in any format that isn't Vintage, where you have a bunch of ways to interact with it and stop it from doing what it needs to do, then like it's probably bad.
Yeah,
it's probably not great.
I was wrong with the next list. The next list is Wurza, so playing War of Invention and the Thopter Sword combo. The other version that is going around is the Jeskai Ascendancy version, as I mentioned. So
yes,
have you seen that thing play?
Is it better than when it first came out?
Oh, absolutely.
It's boring.
Because the loop is just Emery,
yeah,
and 2 Mox Opals.
Oh.
Because you tap it to be able to cast the Mox Opal,
which
triggers
in your graveyard, and then you cast it for free.
And the Ascendancy untaps your Emery.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So you literally then just search for whatever your win condition is, if it's Fate Stitchers, if it's whatever else. But yeah, it's gross. It's a gross deck.
I don't like that.
Yeah, so Emery and Mox Opal. Good team. Highest of fives. Anything else in... Oh, hey, shout out to Josh McClain, who top aided this.
Yeah, he was also playing the outcome deck. We actually have Affinity in this top eight.
God, good luck. he's playing For All That Glitters. Is that right?
It can't be right.
I mean, why not?
Mainly because it says that it's not legal in Modern.
All the glitters is the aura. But,
yeah,
you have +1 for each artifact you control.
So maybe
I think it might be legit. Like,
I wonder why. We're looking at the list on MTG Goldfish, yeah, so sure. I wonder why. What's going on there? But the other thing that's interesting is it's playing Ginger Brute.
Love that you put that. You put all the glitters on it, and you can't block it.
I know.
Fast as fast can be.
Well, to be fair, Burn has a lot of creatures can block this, but not very effectively.
Yeah, I think this deck actually is playing all the glitters. I'm not going to lie.
It probably is. I wouldn't be surprised.
Just like your gingerbread man a little cape, and he just off he goes.
Well, I mean, like, and it's just like another... So it's just another, cranial plating, right?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, yeah. Cranial plating doesn't go to the graveyard when you kill the creature, but...
It doesn't glitter. Huh?
It doesn't glitter either.
Have you seen a cranial plating?
I mean, it's probably pretty shiny.
I don't know. I imagine they're, like, war-worn, you know?
Well, yeah, but, like, you know.
Sure.
Look at the art. It literally has shine.
It's brown.
In it. It's copper, and it's shining in the light in the art.
Yeah, you take your rag, you spit on it, you shine it up.
Yeah, that's a shiny one. That plating's shiny.
It
doesn't glitter, though.
Okay.
Well, oh, it's the name of the card. Whatever.
Anyway, I think this is kind of maybe, you know, having a hyper aggressive, you know, deck, you know, like Affinity going back into the format, could definitely take advantage of some of the decks that are trying to just combo you out, because you definitely want to be fast with those Urza decks and stuff like that. You don't want to give them too many turns. It doesn't take them many turns to kind of get set up. So if you don't have, like, you know, Thought Seizes, things to disrupt their hand, then maybe this is where you're going. And of course, this deck does have Thought Seize in the sideboard. But yeah, maybe this is where you're looking to combat that.
I just want to point out that the definition of glitter is to shine with a bright, shimmering, reflected light.
Yeah, do we think that that's a shimmery, reflective light?
Yes.
I think
you can see, on the top of cranial plating, yes, you can see the light being reflected. That is a shimmering light.
I'm going
back to the art.
I'm glad that we've chosen this hill to die on, apparently.
I mean, what? We could either die on this hill or die on the big gold pile. Like, I don't know.
I don't think it's going to take too long to see more and more outcome decks just become the norm. We already see three in the top eight lists. So, it's not going to be surprising to see that, you know, more people just try to play it and pick it up. And it feels like since we've had, I mean, realistically, since we've had, like, Lantern Control, but more exclusively once, like, Urza has, like, showed up, or even KCI. Like, even when we had KCI, it seems like we've been, like, having some sort of overpowered artifact deck kind of exists and persists in the format. And like with KCI, you know, KCI got banned, and we kind of, like,
we had Lantern win a Pro Tour, and then you had KCI get banned, and then you had the war decks in general, now there is a, so yeah, you just, all of these decks start with Mox Opal and end with Mox Opal, and you know.
Yeah, I think it's time to let it go. Just to let it go.
It's October, not December. Easy now.
I mean, you know, Faithless Looting's gone, and that has, you know, definitely breathed new life into the format, but it feels like it's getting, you know, quite honestly kind of resealed. It like gets shut off from that fresh air by the presence of Urza. And again, this kind of goes back to our joking point that Modern Horizons exists to point out the flaws in the modern format.
Remember the 3 weeks that you could play Stoneforge Mystic?
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, you might be thinking I'm making a joke about being banned again. Nope. Just a self ban. Can't exist in the format. So cool.
Yeah.
Stoneforge and Jason Mind Sculptor are both unbanned in this format, just kind of sit in the corner and be like, you can play with us now, we know.
Yeah, we got it.
Don't you want to? No.
There's an Azorius control list in 13th place.
It probably has
both of them. Yeah.
Doesn't have a Stoneforge.
Does not have Stoneforge.
Oh.
So I don't think there's any Stoneforge mystics in this entire top.
Wow.
We have 28 decks here.
Remember when people were terrified of that card?
Nope. 24th place. Zorius doesn't have it either.
Not even good enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's Modern. It could get bad. I'm interested to see the next big Modern tournament that we have. I don't know when that is, like solo Modern tournament. I think that's Indy.
It's Indy next weekend.
So I'm excited. I'm not excited.
You have Indy and then you have Regionals, which gives you a huge deck dump.
Yeah.
So.
Regionals is I don't know how good that is going to be at like.
I just get a lot of decks.
That's yeah,
all.
For
you
sure.
Get a lot
for
of
sure.
decks.
You get actually the largest sample size, I think.
Yeah.
Too, which is you get to beat the regional bias
yeah,
and
like,
all that
like,
stuff.
Yeah, you can okay. see where things are. So I like it. You want to move to standard?
It's going to be pretty short.
Who wants to move to standard? Yeah.
So,
you called it a red flag earlier. I think it's a band colored flag.
It depends. Sometimes it's on fire.
No, it's on fire. Yeah.
I mean, realistically, if it's Golos paste, it's all the colors, technically. But
that's fair.
But the winner was, of course, Ban Golos, piloted by Jonathan Rossum, defeating Golos Fires.
Is Golos on fire?
Piloted by Jeremy Bertaroni? Bertaroni? Riceroni?
He's a San Francisco tree. Oh I'm God. So sorry, sir.
No offense, Jeremy. We're just terrible at names.
We just love rice.
We just love rice.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Love rice.
Okay, no, rice is great. Rice is great.
I did want to shout out Evan Appleton, who top aided this open for one of the DC guys.
Okay.
Hans would know. So,
also playing Bangolos.
Cool dude, yeah.
We have Edgar Magaish playing Bangolos. We have Zach Allen playing Sultai Golos. Dan Straub playing Bangolos. Evan Appleton, as for mentioned, Bangolos. Matthew Nass playing Simic Midrange.
Laurel and a hearty handshake to you, sir.
And then Jarvis Yu playing Bangolos. And, this being a team tournament, we don't necessarily know individual records, how well they actually did in Standard. You would assume that they probably did fairly well to kind of show up here in the top placing teams. A lot of Bangolos, a lot of Field of the Dead. And I think, that is the strongest conclusion that you could draw is that Field of Dead is just good. And it's a win condition that is hard to interact with, hard to overcome. And you need to have some sort of strategy around it to close out the game.
The problem is that the strategy around it, when you say that, it is tough. Obviously we have smaller format with a huge rotation, but we lost not just some answers. We lost most of the answers. You no longer have Field of Ruin. You no longer have Blood Sun. You no longer have
Alpine Moon.
You still have, Unmoored Ego?
Yes.
But when Field of the Dead is in play, what are your actual, realistic options that you can play?
Demolish.
That is not a realistic option.
Tectonic Rift, right?
I've just playing on Arena. They get Agent of Treachery every now and then. And I know that I like my 7-drop. To be the answer,
so
stealing their land.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think it's tough. There really isn't a good answer right now, and this is what one of the biggest flags. I think Golos is obviously a good card, but Golos at the end of the day is a 5-mana 3/5 with an insane activated ability. If Golos was just sitting here without Field of the Dead, there this would not be the kind.
No,
Field of the Dead, but those two things combined, it is surprising to me how they sort of piece these two things together and just sort of let them sit there. We want to tell players too, and this is the common thing. You'll always hear that crowd of people who are when a card's people just aren't trying hard enough and aren't working hard enough, blah, blah, blah. When you look at this list, this outcome, it tells me that people tried real hard and they found it. You don't play an answer. You just play the card.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause there isn't a really good answer. People try playing Ashiok. People have played Unmoored Ego, but again, Unmoored Ego only works if you don't have one in play already. If you already do, then awesome.
Yep.
Ashiok too, doesn't stop you from having it in play. It turns off some of the better cards like Circuitous Route and Golos, but if it's already in play, then your Ashiok might just not do anything. I don't know that there's a good answer, and I don't know that there's maybe there is a deck that is definitively can take on Golos consistently, but I gotta tell you, I put together the Golos Fires deck. And we can talk about how Fires of Invention is an absurd Magic card that is just very, very good. But I hadn't played much Standard at all over the summer and haven't played much competitive Magic. And I put that to get together. And I believe that I sent in one word to our Discord. It was like, I put this deck together. And it was an expletive. I was like, this is and I've done some things that don't feel right in Standard playing this deck.
Oh, yeah, it's absurd.
Like, so the power level is obscene.
Yeah, I've played the Jeskai Fires deck for the play every card, every deck in Standard. If you go and get 12 wins, you get every card in Standard, or one of every card in Standard. Yeah. And I'd never played a game with the deck, and it's just busted. You get to do, you're right, you get to do some absurd things, especially with Fae of Wishes. That card is very good when you can get, you come to find that there's just a lot of good card standards if they cost zero. And that's really the appeal and the power of that deck.
I've been playing Jeremy Bitterioni, his list, I think exactly. Yes, his list exactly. And like cards in that I saw on the sideboard, I'm like, I'll never wish for this. And then like, I wished for Chance for Glory.
Yeah.
And it just like untapped and killed my opponent. I was like, huh, okay. I wished for Planar Cleansing and got to cast Planar Cleansing for free, and then had still a Hydra. Like, the whole setup was I still had Hydroid Crest in my hand, so that was my two spells for my Fire Invention. Cleared the board, but also cleared my fires so I could cast my third spell for the turn.
Yeah.
Like, I think the only thing I haven't searched for yet is, and I haven't played it a ton, is the Legion's End. That one has felt like the lowest impact, because most of the time they don't just have, if it's zombies, I probably just want, like, Clarion, for example. Sure. If I have an army of zombies and they specifically want to attack, that would be the scenario. But I have not had that scenario yet. But I was telling these guys, like, I played a match where my opponent did play two Agent of Treacheries. And they played it on turn, five or six. Whenever they – it was turn five because they had Circuitous routed. So turn five, take my land. Like, okay, cool. Play another field, then they take it. So they have two, and then they play a third. Then I hit my first Golos. They ended that game with six Field of Dead in play, and it was never close. I was never even pressured. That was playing against Bant Golos. So I was just like, oh, okay. You took two of my lands, and each one of them is essentially a spell. Cool.
Didn't matter.
Did not matter. Like, it is... It's obviously like these decks are unbeatable, but the power level is crazy.
The first time your opponent has infinite mana to use Kenrith over and over is just the worst feeling in the world. Like, oh, you're a 3, this is fine. But Kenrith in play, and you go, oh, you're at like 30. It's, you know...
Yeah, bad news. Kenrith tends to work one of two ways. Yeah, you're either a low life total and you're like, no, I'm not. Or right. Or like, you made a bunch of tokens that turn and they're like, okay, well, at least I get to untap. And you're like, oh no, actually, haste. So it's either like just like all the way up or all the way down. I have you been playing this deck as well?
I've been playing against it a lot. Yeah. No, I've been playing the Oko decks, but this is frustrating to play against.
It has to be. When you look at the and again, team open 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
I think it's 9 of the top 16.
Well, so let's see here. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 of the top 28 decks are playing Golos in some amount.
Yeah.
and the other Bant decks are also just like ramp decks of some kind. That's scary. Now, are there some other decks that are peeking through?
Yeah. Like here and there, again, you know, we do have Matt Ness with Simic Midrange, the, you know, aforementioned Oko deck. You have like Jeskai Fires, you have you know, Four Color Fires deck.
So are there things peeking through that aren't playing either Golos and Field of the Dead or Fires of Invention in both?
I mean, the I guess like
Simic Midrange by Matt Nass.
You have mono black aggro, and this is a deck that I've seen a fair amount on.
Really
on Moto.
This in this tournament, I think.
Yeah. So the nice thing about this deck is actually Drillbit. This deck really does a good job of playing it as close to Thoughtseize as you can.
Yeah.
And one of the things about these Golos decks is if you can get an early piece of disruption in, then sometimes that can be enough. I've seen a lot of decks that, like, even like the blue green decks, like the Matt Nass decks, playing like things like Disdainful Strokes because again, if you can hit one at the right time, then you can probably keep the game in your favor.
Yeah.
The problem is though that you end up with a lot of cards in this deck, like four copies of Murderous Rider. I have to say, I don't know how you guys feel about this. I think Murderous Rider is actively not nearly as good as we thought it was going to be. We called it Hero's Downfall. It certainly isn't.
So I think like it on paper and like in a vacuum, it's still just as good as Hero's Downfall, right? The format just isn't that kind of format.
I'm telling you, the lose two life has been a huge detriment and something that I can count on depending on what I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
Like against Golos, it's not a big deal. Like it's fine there, but then the card just isn't good. Like
it's bad. You're against just, Golos. Yeah, you're just, yeah, yeah.
But against a lot of like any of the decks where you're sort of racing and things like that, like I think that against the adventure decks, Murderous Rider is super average.
Sure, but
the life total loss is a real problem at times.
But I think like Hero's Downfall against the aggressive decks was
always average.
Yeah,
and now it's a lot worse. Sure. That's what I'm suggesting.
I don't think it's. I think like. The reason why like Hero's Downfall was so good is because like you had like that's what the format kind of revolved around, right?
Sure, for sure.
And like, but I think Murderous Rider doesn't have like that existence. It doesn't get to play in that realm. It's not what the format's about. It's not just a mid range slugfest. You know what I mean? And I feel like Hero's Downfall, that's kind of what it was.
It is a mid range slugfest, but the mid range decks are just
they just don't have creatures. Yeah,
they just go over the top a lot more.
Like they're ramp decks, like to me, and like maybe it's just like semantics or whatever.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
But like they're not like. Ramp decks are winning the game, the late game. Like, they're the replacement for our control decks in this format, because Teferi makes control decks laughable. So, that's kind of where I look at them in, like, the game-winning span, as far as, like, as opposed to, like, mid-range decks, which are kind of they're trying to win, like, a few turns earlier.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the specific mid-range decks are probably looking to win before everything gets kind of out of hand. With you know these Golos decks, but I don't know if that deck can like hang.
I don't either. I'm just saying like at a deck like this, I want to be looking at maybe like Order of Midnight and ignoring this card for the time being.
Yeah,
I think Murderous Rider has been good against me as the Oko player, but
that's fair. We would expect I can give you that. That makes sense.
Like that deck's declining in popularity, so like maybe just it needs to go to the sideboard or be just cut for a little bit, but.
I felt like, and now granted, I played a lot of like, is it Phoenix the first weakish in the format? And I think inherently, whenever my opponent is casting a 3-mana removal spell on an Arclight Phoenix, it's going to feel bad for them anyways. Like, so some of that may be jading my opinion of it, but I feel like any of the decks I've played so far, I feel like my opponent is wasting their turn most of the time. It doesn't feel like they're really pressing much of an advantage. And honestly, Hero's Downfall did make the format that it worked in like go, but the deck that it was played in predominantly in that format. Was more of a control deck, you know, so like the decks like that one that are they, you know, that mono black deck wants to attack. If your turn, like their turn three is like that versus like Midnight Rider. Like every time it's that versus Midnight Rider, it's probably a worse game for them.
Midnight Reaper?
Reaper, I'm sorry, not Rider.
The 3-2,
right? Like the 3-2 that says kill my other creatures, I get an advantage versus I'm taking my turn off to lose two life and kill your guy. I hope that's a good enough tempo advantage. I don't know. Doesn't seem right for me in the format right now. I want my disruption to be, at least with the format set up, I want my disruption to be Drill Bit. I don't know if I want it to be Murderous Rider.
I guess like Knight of the Elven Legion, Blacklands Paragon, Murderous Rider guy seems like a really good start.
Yeah, it does.
I think that's a good start.
And the reason why these Mono Black decks can even hang is because like you can have aggressive starts and you can beat your opponent down and that's fine, but they can grind.
100%.
So you have like... Aria, first of Lochtwain.
Yeah.
And that is your grindy, like, I'll grind you with my, you know, kind of garbage creatures.
And that's why you're playing things like Lazatab Reaver.
Yeah, like, you're finding ways to, like, get, like, drown your opponent in a card advantage. You're not just, like, a traditional aggro deck. You are most certainly a very, like, can be a very, very grindy, mid-range deck at the end of it. Like people, I think this is kind of getting misnamed or misnomered as being aggressive deck, because you have aggressive starts, but I think like
I think you're fundamentally looking at this deck the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean your average curve
you're
is
playing
what,
you're playing
a
play set of 4/1 or 3/1s with flash. This deck wants to attack and only wants to attack. Yes, it has the chance to start grinding out later, but that it's much more interested in the trigger you get from your creatures coming into play than it really is about drawing the cards.
Sure. I guess that's true.
Like
it can grind. It
certainly can grind, but the focus of the deck, if you're not playing Paragon, unless your focus is attacking. Like, you're not playing a 3-1 unless your opponent, like, unless you're attacking your opponent. And that's why I think the Murderous Rider might be wrong here.
And I do think that Paragon plays can play a dual role, like, realistically, and give you outs in games you have no business winning.
It can do that. You know, it can do things like take down, like, a Beanstalk Giant or something. Like,
yes,
it can do that, but... That's not its best scenario.
Your average converted mana cost is 2.2, and that's including Drillbit as a 3-drop.
So,
it's definitely... I definitely hear what you're saying with Arya. Or Arya.
Nah, it's Arya.
She lives in Game of Thrones, yeah. but Ayara. But
what? Yeah.
But sure. I've liked these decks. I've liked the Rakdos builds them as well. The Menace Knight...
That one's been messing me up.
Well, and I think that card's really good with Drillbit.
Yeah.
I know it's awkward because, like, you're giving them an extra card, but making sure you can cast it, and, like, especially for the Golos decks, that extra card is usually a land. It really is. Like, they're playing 30 lands. Like, you know, the Drillbit is important for one specific card, and it keeps you with that steady flow, but you also get to attack. Like, it just has Menace. Like, you just get to attack through either, you know, even the first zombie. So, I think, like, Spawn of Mayhem has been... better, you know, with those curves. Yeah. So I've seen some Jund builds as well that are playing like all those, like, early drops, and then their 4-drops are Spawn, which is technically a 3-drop, and Questing Beast. And most of the aggro decks I've seen that have been successful, and the ones that have been successful against me, are the ones that curves end in Questing Beast.
Yep. Questing Beast is a beating. Yeah. That is 100% for sure.
It's the only way I win the matchup, I think.
I mean, it's just like I look at my zombie tokens and go, but what if I stack them real tall?
Yeah. What if I put one on another one's shoulder?
Yeah, the problem with the Questing Beast line is, like, you still just have 10 zombies and I'm taking 8, you know, 16.
Right,
you know?
It depends on how the early game went, for sure.
Yeah. There's a lot of games that end in Questing Beast, and, like, I win just because I'm attacking and you can't do anything about it, or your Golos doesn't buy you enough time to block. But, like, there's also just a lot of games where you have double Securitas Root and, like, I'm just dead, you know?
Right.
Which is definitely just a problem that even, like, the good hate card isn't good enough.
So when you say you've been playing the Simic midrange deck,
I've been playing the Simic, yeah. I've been playing the Oko, like, ramp decks.
Yeah, I still think no matter where you're at in the format, turn 2 Oko is...
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's just...
Sure.
It is very tough to navigate that. And, again, I think that is the biggest appeal to, like, Murderous Rider, is having a clean answer to Oko. And even to a lesser extent, like, I know it didn't see a lot of play this weekend, but on Arena, it's been around, which is the Royal Scions. There's been some interesting like teamer builds I've seen of, like, Questing Beasts and stuff like that that are playing the Royal Scions and stuff. And, like, man, you play things like Questing Beasts and you're like, all right, here's another 2, like, just like a little bit of damage. Here's this, and, like, I'm like, man, how do I kill any of these planeswalkers that go up to 6-7 loyalty almost immediately? That is tough.
When you fall behind,
Hero's Downfall.
sure. But, like, and, like, here's the thing, though, with those decks, even like this one, like, you know, the one that Matt Nass has here, like, if you're playing, if they go turn 2, like, Oko, and then you Hero's Downfall or Oko, and then their next play is, like, so they went turn 1 Gilded Goose, turn 2 Oko, and made a food, right? And then you, like, ostensibly kill the, you know, with a Murderous Rider, and then they get to untap with their food and their goose and play a Questing Beast. And you're like, well, I spent my turn killing your Planeswalker and taking 2 damage, and here's this creature with haste that's going to do more. My creatures don't block it effectively. I hope I can do something. I wish my turn 3 would have been something more aggressive. But then against Oko, that isn't better.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I guess, though, like, if that's the line, like, and that's, like, probably the best start is, like, the Oko player. But, like, all right, so I'm at 14 if I'm the Mono Black, the Murderous Rider player, and my opponent has 1 card in hand, you know? Because, like, Questing Beast, maybe 2 cards in hand. Because they have 3 left after they do a turn 2. They have 4 left after they do a turn 2, right? Yes. So you have 3 cards left in their hand.
So then the next turn is land that 5. 3 cards, yes?
Yeah. So, you know, you're probably fine. You have 6.
I guess.
You know, you played 1-drop, 2-drop, but I feel like you're fine. Probably.
Yeah, maybe. It's possible. Maybe it's just as bad, though, if, like, the other drop was, like, Wicked Wolf. I mean, that's looking at a very specific matchup. I don't know.
I may
just be wrong about that, but I will also suggest there's a reason why Murderous Rider isn't dominating the format.
Yeah, it's way more narrow than we thought it was going to be.
For sure. Anything else you want to say about the Simic Midrange deck?
It's not great.
Okay.
Unless you turn 2 Oko.
Turn 2 Oko is just, like, a whole different game. Like, your deck feels entirely different.
Right, yeah. If I don't turn 2 Oko, I honestly just want to concede most of the time. Because my opponent plays, like, a creature that's good. I'm like, well, I hope I draw a Hydrocrisis and can kill him. But otherwise, you're playing this long game that ends in you blocking with a Paradise Root and dying. But, Turn two Oko is, it feels like you're cheating.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Let's mention then 21st place mono red aggro before we switch to the classic.
Yeah.
This is, interestingly enough, this is a more traditional version of mono red. The one that's been pretty popular on Arena had been the Cavalcade build.
Yeah, I think
like, I think the deck's bad.
I think the deck's actively bad. You're playing a bunch of Raging Goblins and like.
Yeah,
you can play a deck that takes advantage of that and plays particular Raging Goblins. We have a lot in the format. Or you can probably just play a better red deck. But in all honesty, like, probably don't play mono red.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's well positioned.
How do these decks beat an army of 2/2s?
You're just faster. Like, that's the goal. But I don't think you can have the velocity of the old mono red decks. I don't think
these are that much faster, though.
No, I think so, yeah.
That's the only thing. Like, the 2-drop slot is so much worse. Like, Rimrock Knight versus, you know, Pyromancer, like, it's such a huge difference that I don't know. I think this feels a lot slower. I also think, like, I think Torbrand has a place. It's very powerful. But this reminds me of Mono Red from last format, where they were, like, splitting Frenzies with, like, Chandra Fire Artisan, and then eventually it was just, like, as much as, like, it just became Frenzy. It's possible this should also just be Frenzies, but yeah. Torbrand's definitely very powerful, but I don't think this kind of build actually takes full advantage of Torbrand moves to the other ones. I will say I love Slaying Fire, and I like seeing 4 Slaying Fire here.
I think it's your best. That's your best card, like, realistically. Yeah,
it is. Like, the last time, what's the last time we had, I'm trying to think here, the last time we had a good form, like a 4 damage burn spell? It was a Convoke, right? Yeah. It was a Stoke the Flames. And like,
2 red, red, right?
Now, granted, I played that mostly with Jeskai Ascendancy, but that card still
feels
good.
I played that mostly with Jeskai aggro.
Yeah, but it feels pretty good still. So yeah. Being able to like tap your, like, oh man. Anyways, but like, I think like Slaying Fire is one of those things where it does help you, like, your opponent is in a more dangerous life total position than they may even realize. So, but you still don't have like Lightning Strike, which is awkward.
Yeah, Lightning Strike was definitely the glue that held the mono red deck together for quite some time.
We wondered why they didn't give it back to us for so long, but each time, now the last times they printed it, it's been very good. Oh, yeah. So I'm not sure. But I at least want to mention that there is a form of red out there, at least 2 forms, but that one's probably best. And then 26th place by John Zug, Simic Flash. This is a deck that I at least wanted to experiment with because it's a deck where Brazen Borrower feels like the most at home. This is already a deck. Playing blue green flash, and Brazen Bar was like, oh, like those moments were in your curve where, like, especially on turn 2, because like this build's playing 2 Quench, and Quench is not a great card. On turn 2, of course, it's pretty good, but I like that when there's holes in your curve for your counter spells, Brazen Borrower is there to be like, no, hold on, I know you thought you resolved this. I think unfortunately for this deck though, it has a lot of holes. Its counter magic is pretty average. You have Frilled Mystic, but
yeah. I just with what the format's doing, I just don't know if these decks can. They are certainly frustrating to play against sometimes, and seem very, very powerful. Like,
but when they have the right curve, feel impossible to beat.
Yeah, for sure.
You either get browned by this deck or just like wonder why they're playing it.
Yeah,
like most of the time.
That is a very good assessment of this deck. Like you're putting your keyboard through your monitor, or you're like, this guy's an idiot.
This guy's an idiot. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, I mean, as the Oko deck, right? And that's my perspective on most things right now is like.
Yeah. I mean, we're all coming from a place. Right, yeah.
You do one big spell every turn, hopefully. So this can get like annoying. But then when they don't have it, you're just like, what are you talking about? Or like, I can just make 3 extra mana and it's fine. I don't know. The deck's doing cool things though. Nightpack Ambusher is a fun card.
Definitely the games where they're able to resolve a Nightpack Ambusher like onto a pretty empty board. They've done what they wanted to.
Right, like they're not losing.
And then sometimes like they just can't stop the Teferi that you play, and you go, cool deck.
That's true. And they also have holes for things like Golos. You know, they're playing a, like this build is playing 1 Essence Capture and 2 Negate, but there's a lot of times where it's like they can't help but let a Golos resolve, and then like even if they have the Brazen Borrower, you've already got the field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So this deck does not have a ton of, like, it has 1 outside of the Borrower, so, and then Spectral Sailor. So like it does kind of get stonewalled by zombies pretty consistently. And then eventually you just run them out of things.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I like the idea of the deck. And I do think like there's going to be moments in this format where this deck is going to be a good choice, a good, good choice. I don't think it's right now. I don't think anything else is a good choice right now.
No.
Or we should just be playing Bear right now.
Yeah. If your deck should probably have like Hydrocrasis in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just like, to me, there's no incentive to try to find a deck that is fighting these ramp decks. Like,
now, if we go to the Classic,
it's a very different story.
Can Aaron Barich convince you that maybe there's a deck that can win it?
Maybe.
I think this deck's terrible.
I thought so too.
It looks terrible on paper, but if you see competent people play it, it's very impressive. It has like the potential for like absurd card advantage.
And it presents like it presents board states quickly that you like. This is the deck that I've actually have had the most trouble with playing on Arena, because sometimes it just presents a board state where I'm like,
Now it is important to note that I do know that Aaron Barish was conceded
fair.
For the points race. The person just wanted the invite.
Oh, Felix didn't care about the points.
And Barish is currently in like a very hot points race in the SCG points. So I know that
and
was.
And yet they're going to the pro or to the Mythic Championship instead of regionals.
Listen, sometimes you got to set your priorities, man.
That would be the most interesting.
That's fair. That's my best attempt at the you criticize society, yet you take part in society. How interesting.
Now I don't know if it was in the finals or in the top four. I can't remember, but I remember seeing that on Twitter.
Let's talk about the deck.
Yeah, for sure. And this is something if you follow like Yeoman 5. They were a big proponent of this deck. They were saying if you could play a deck this weekend, you should be playing Green White Adventures.
Yeah, Yeoman 5 is a content creator that I think you've got to start paying more attention to.
They perfectly like predicted the format for the weekend.
Yeah, I just typed Yeoman 5 into Google.
They write for TCG Player. I think that's where they stream and such, but I think TCG Player.
I'm on the right thing. This little
Yeoman 5, and then yeah, articles are there too. So for TCG. But yes, definitely did a good job predicting the
yes.
format. So this is Green White Adventures, which we saw a couple different adventure builds start getting popular. There was Jund Adventures for a little bit. But abusing the power of like Edgewall Innkeeper.
Yes.
We just talked about how big the format is and how mono red isn't good. It means that Shock isn't being played. It means Disfigure is not being played. And like me as the Golos deck, like this is their turn one. That's scary for me, because like even if I'm able to hit like the Wrath spell early on, they're gonna have 5, 6, 7 cards still in their hand and some number of creatures sitting off going on an adventure.
Yeah,
And the card advantage is super real with Innkeeper.
Yeah, like your deck is literally just a bunch of 2-for-1s, which is fantastic, and they aren't something you have to commit to the battlefield necessarily. If you don't want to, they can just, like you said, hang out, have an adventure. And it plays into the style of green or white weenie decks or smaller like green white little kid decks that you want. Like you want to commit something to the board. You don't want to overcommit. You want to make sure that you have a way to beat a Wrath or come back from it easily. And be able to close out the game through various means. And whether that is making one of your, you know, big creatures fly suddenly and with your fairy guide mother, or by, you know, giving them a overrun sort of effect or with a flourish. So, you know, you kind of have a bunch of different ways to win the game. And then you're also just able to play like Questing Beast, which we already discussed, like that card being very, very good. I
think it's really interesting to see a deck like this exist in the format, it being based in green and not, you know, it doesn't have to play any of the mana dorks, which has been sort of the, you know, like the Paradise Druid or Incubation Druid like package, or even like Gilded Goose now. Like it gets to ignore all of that.
Yeah.
It gets to really honestly, like even things like Love Shark Beast were like, you know, so it just presents like a 5/5 on 3. Mm-hmm. And like I said, their 1/1's probably living. Yeah. So,
well, then they have like 8 other ones, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah. It's just, yeah, it is an interesting deck that it surprises me each time I play it, where it's like, man, like they just present a board state that is just massive. And
yeah. And
it's
like,
tough to deal with.
And don't sleep on like Shepherd of Flock being able to rebuy spells. Yeah. Like that's the big thing. It doesn't just rebuy creatures, it rebuys spells.
Right.
And then once upon a time doing double duty, like finding a creature, but also a spell, like all of you're getting like a lot out of all of the pieces of your deck. And this reminds me somewhat, like I said, of if you were playing like mono white in the previous format, this has a lot of the same feeling to it. You're even playing like Venerated Luxodon because you have the amount of creatures on board to be able to
sometimes your worst plan is just to be like turn one drop, turn two one drops, and make a Luxodon. Yeah. I also want to mention, and I saw you hovering over this card, Flaxen Intruder. Flaxen Intruder is a card that like seems super innocuous, but against a bunch of the Fires decks, if they can't present a blocker early on, it's awkward for them to tap out to play Fires.
Yeah.
Like as the goalless deck who wants to just play Fires, like if I don't have like the Field of the Dead right after, like to like make a blocker, it's like, well, I actually can't do this. You are just going to destroy my Fires, and I don't like that. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I do wonder like what the tension is between like Flaxen Intruder versus something like Knight of Autumn. Like Knight of Autumn seems like if you can play Knight of Autumn, that seems like a great card to really look at. It has targets within, you know, the Golos decks that can kill a Golos. Like, I'm not sure how necessarily relevant that is, but it's an option. And then it can kill Fires. Like,
can I tell you how much more I'd rather kill a Golos with the Knight of Autumn than a Lonesome Rider or whatever it is?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Is it Lonesome Rider?
Murder.
Lonesome Rider is a song by...
Lonesome Rider is a one in a white...
It's also a song, and I so oops.
I like this version better than the ones that are playing the artifact that like double triggers.
I absolutely
yeah, just a lot cute. Of air. You just don't need it. Again, that's another way to get a bunch of like advantage, but you don't need it. Like Edgewald Innkeeper is like that is when your deck is busted. Like, and then your other draws you can get by. But I was really impressed. Like I didn't think like I was like, oh, this deck is definitely weird and doesn't make that much sense, but it's very surprising. And you do have a little bit of a transformational sideboard here where you can kind of side into like a green white tokens build. I'm not sure how what decks you're doing that against necessarily. But potentially maybe the Simic decks, maybe that's when you're kind of doing it. Because I can't think of other decks where it's good. It's not good. I don't think it's good against Fires because they have like Sarkhan potentially, like Jeskai Fires, and Sarkhan's, real funny against tokens. If you have a dragon or a couple
or some dragons. Yeah.
And you don't want this against, I don't feel like you'd want to shift into that for Golos, like because
what do you want this against?
I'm not sure. Like that is my question.
Yeah. Simic is like, it's fine, I guess, but like your main deck's pretty good against Simic. Like you're still just doing cool stuff. I don't know.
I'm no expert on the deck, but I do think it is better than it looks.
Oh yeah, I mean that's definitely true. Like the first time somebody played this against me, I was like, "What the hell?" And then I lost. My opponent had 9 cards in hand, you know, and it didn't matter.
And you were like, know? "What the hell?"
Exactly. Right.
So I did actually want to talk about the green black deck that's in third place, piloted by Sean. Kipple.
With a K.
Wow. I'm sure he gets that all the time.
this is where you see another option to get rid of a Field of Dead in Assassin's Trophy.
That's true, and that's a card I haven't really thought of too much.
And I think like maybe like green black archetypes just need to be explored a little bit more, and maybe that card suddenly rises in like stock. It's awkward because you're still, you know, losing out on the exchange somewhat because they still get a land. It's not like you're setting them back in that particular way.
No, we've talked about how like that one piece of disruption like that can get, you know, this deck get has, you know, this is another deck that's, you know, it's playing the adventure package. We have Lovestruck Beast, we have Questing Beast, we have Rankle. Like one good piece, one well-timed piece of interaction does wonders here. And again, like I like Assassin's Trophy just because it's 2 mana. You know, I liked, you know, Drillbit because it's usually 1 mana versus, you know,
on board you go at 3 mana,
right?
You know,
and like this deck's playing Murderous Rider as well, but I do think that like its plan gears at least a little bit better for that. Yeah. And I like seeing Order of Midnight here. I think that card is just like, honestly, just like the Shepherd of the Flock leads to some gross play patterns where you can get a ton of value. So I like this a lot. I do think
it definitely has an adventures bend as well.
Oh yeah, no, there's a couple of these green black decks here in the top 8 of this one. There's 6th place, 7th, and 7th place, both being green black adventures. One thing I will say about all these decks, I am looking just to make sure I'm not crazy. All the ones in the top 8, not a single copy of New Garrick.
Oh, yeah.
And even specifically, like, the seventh place list, Matthew Hoffman, is playing a six-mana Planeswalker in the sideboard. It's Liliana Dreadhorde General. So I think a lot of people were pretty high on Garrick, and, like, I saw, like, Garricks were selling on, like, the Sick Deals group for, like, on Facebook for $4 a piece or something like that, and I was like, oh, well.
He's
sorry, Garrick.
Not the format for not the format for him. Like, I'm trying to think if I know Elspeth, like Sun's Champion, was just like a very powerful planeswalker. Would it be good enough in this format? You have Jeskai Fires, which definitely gives it, you know, a step in the right direction. But like, I don't think that like Sun's Champion doesn't really do anything in like Bangolo, like against Bangolos, right?
Right.
Bangolos probably just play it, but
it'd at least be in the sideboard to wish for.
Yeah, 100%. So it's just like it's just not good enough in the killing one creature and drawing a card. Not where you want to be. Just not where you want to be. So
no, it's not, and that's so. I think like that's a womp. A couple more decks here in the top 16 I want at least want to mention. We have Gruul Midrange in 12th place, Randy Ball. Shout out, he's just doing what we want to be doing here. All the Domries, main deck Veil of Summer.
That's
the spice.
That is something. Oof.
I also like four main deck Flame Sweep. Hey, my creatures don't die to this, but all your zombies do.
Do, yeah.
And I need it. Like, this was a metagame call, like, if I've ever heard one.
For what it's worth, I don't know if this is correct, because it says there's four in the main, but also four in the side.
Oh, you're right. There is. That's not good.
Yeah, it's got 90 cards total. Yeah.
Oh, no. They just move all the sideboard cards to the main.
I love it. Play 90 cards. Do it.
Never Dude, mind. You I was cowards. Excited, but yeah. I didn't do
it. Build this deck.
No.
Yeah, take it to your local judge.
Two of the Domries should be in the sideboard. All right, never mind. No, but it's still cool. I still like this, like your Pelt Collector, just like all the way up into your Scargan Hellkite deck. I know this is a deck that Morgan likes. You know, this is a deck that you better curve out well, because you, unlike these adventure decks, like you're trading a little bit of like more raw power for any sort of like card advantage. And I don't know if that's going to get you there, because you're also not like lightning fast.
So. No, you're a little bit bigger, you're a little bit slower. If like. This might have some game against the like smaller aggressive decks, right?
Right.
But against your ramp decks, you're just going to get swallowed.
I do like the things like Gruul Spellbreaker become 4/4s, and
yes,
and so you're questing beasts and stuff, so it survives like Clarion, for example.
Yeah.
That's nice. But and then I want to mention a deck I already alluded to once, which was Teemer Midrange. This is the deck I've played against a couple times on Arena. That's playing like. A lot of our adventure creatures, and then a ton of planeswalkers, including Domri, Oko, and the Royal the Scions.
Cool. How do you deal with all these 3-mana planeswalkers?
Well, so it's playing 4 Gilded Goose and 4 Arboreal Grazer, too. It wants to cast these planeswalkers on
100%.
2. So if we're already deciding that like some of these planeswalkers are incredibly difficult to interact with once they're in play on turn 2, yeah, let's just like try and get at least one of them in play.
This deck is sweet.
Yeah, it's got like multiple plans, but it's like ultimately a Sarkhan deck. I think it's interesting. But the one thing I really like about this is that, like, this is a deck that I think other versions of this have been Sultai or Black-Green. And, like, this deck is foregoes, like, Murderous Rider. Like, it's like, no, I'm going to play, like, Brazen Borrower instead, use that as actual tempo, and not waste all my time on this card. And I think that's an interesting way to build.
I think this deck still needs a little work.
I don't disagree.
It's definitely got some weird ones. Don't know why you're playing one Once Upon a Time. Don't do that.
Just so you can mize it in your opening hand.
Just don't do that.
I get my one free spell.
It's cute. I don't think it's good.
I'm going to play one Once Upon a Time in most of my Brawl decks. How do you feel about that?
That's the limit. That's about all you can do. So it's correct. Also, like, I wonder... I think if you're gonna want to, if you want to play the Sarkhan plan, like just play Fires, just play Jeskai Fires.
Don't rain on this person's parade.
I think like
Craig, you do you.
Hey, man, you're like sweet.
I think identifying like turn 2 3-mana planeswalkers being powerful is like great, and that makes a lot of sense. But in a lot of the things that they're doing are definitely powerful. But I think with a little tuning, we could get there. Boreal Grazer in this deck. I understand what you're trying to do, but
What are you trying to do? What's the other option? Turn three planeswalkers.
So, like, I don't know. Maybe like, you got to figure out something else for this deck.
Hey, Craig, really Morgan's advocating trading.
Craig, Morgan thinks he knows you. He doesn't.
I don't. Doesn't. You're right. I do not know your soul. I do not know your soul or anything.
If you
want to
play, like,
a
medium version of something, you do it, buddy. This is cool. I don't know.
The more I look at this deck, the more I'm like, this deck's kind of everywhere.
I hate it.
This deck's kind of everywhere.
Oh, I mean, there's just too much going on for sure, but like...
I'm just like, you're playing... let me take a look at that Gruul midrange deck again.
Like,
okay.
Most of his cards are like... His creatures are like the Oko suite. Like...
I mean, you're also playing like three Domri, and then you're only playing... You're playing, what, 18 creatures? Two of them have zero power. Like,
well, they'll have one power now.
Yeah, they have one.
Good, great.
Yeah, you have some 1/2s, baby.
So, you know, this.
I guess you're playing more as an accelerant.
I don't think this is the kind of deck that would have like legs in the format going forward. But for a week one deck, when people have an expected metagame, and you're just like, you'll never know what's coming next.
Sarkin 30 you.
Yeah, it's like what? It's 30 because I have a Domri, and they all get +1/+0.
Thank you. Correct. So... Accurate. And hey, that could be effective week one. And you
obviously,
know, looking at this classic, we definitely
Craig
have.
Says he knows.
We definitely have a more... I mean, he did better than I would have ever done in this tournament, so, like, hats off to him. Don't get me wrong.
Fine if Craig has a Twitter hold on it.
But, this does give me a little bit more hope that there is more diversity within the format. I don't know how much of that you can really, like, glean from a classic, but I do hope that the format is more diverse than just... You should probably be playing Bant Golos or a Golos deck of some persuasion or potentially a Fires of Invention deck of some persuasion, but I'm not sure if that's going to pan out. And hopefully, you know, once we get better mana, I know the next set we're not going to get any mana that's going to help aggressive decks, right?
Assuming we
get going to be temples.
The other half of the temples. So I guess this is my question here. So, like, I want to go through and highlight all these extra decks that could be played, but for the most part, outside of maybe the Adventures decks here in the Classic, most of them are a blip compared to how good either Golos is or just Bant is, or at least some version of Fires. So is this a standard like format that had just like had an easy to identify like level one and people just flock to that? Or is this level one actually going to be like that's tier zero and like you have to be able to like to get there? Are people who are playing these other decks like this Teemer deck or Black Aggro or anything else, are they just like, and I've been this player, are they just fooling themselves? I mean, are you just, I mentioned I played, I put together the Fires deck and Keller in our Discord goes, you're a traitor. And I was like, winning games though.
Yeah, right.
I can't lose. I honestly think that if you are building a deck that isn't doing something absurd in the format, then I think you're just making it harder for yourself. I think that the aggressive decks aren't good enough. Whether they are, you know, mono black, mono red, I don't think you have the ability to be as consistent as the Golos decks. And I think the Fires decks can be more powerful, right? So, if you're not doing that, then I think you're just, again, you're just making it harder for yourself. And that's fine. Some people like a challenge. Some people like to take a deck that doesn't have the same same power level, same consistency as the best deck and win or take advantage of a format. I think it's unfortunate that you don't have something like just a, like you can't have just like a control deck in this format because Teferi's too good for counter magic, right? You can't consistently always have like this plan where you play like a bit of a counter game and then win in the late game because you can't play counters with Teferi, and then the late game is way bigger than you could ever deal with, right? So like you were naturally getting rid of an entire archetype right at the start of the format. Now maybe that'll change when the format, you know, maybe there's a hole that can be taken advantage of within the format for an archetype like that. I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case, but maybe. Your aggressive decks are not at most two color, probably have, you know, fairly rough mana depending on what you're doing, and if they are two color, and if they're single color, then they're not as good. Like mono white doesn't exist. You still have black and red, and your green white is like your other aggressive archetype.
we definitely have things missing in this format because of how small it is.
For sure.
And I think like when you say something like, you know, they're just making, you know, people like to play a deck just for this reason. I don't think it's just like, sometimes, yeah, people just like to play a deck. But most of the time, like if you are going to play a deck that isn't the tier zero deck, then that deck has to at least have a really good matchup against those decks. So like, I'm thinking of like the format with Jeskai Saheeli, and I played the Black Red Zombies deck, right?
Yeah.
Like, I knew the Black Red Zombies overall as a deck was like probably too cutesy for a lot of things, but it did beat, you know, Jeskai Saheeli. And in the open that we went to, like, it was like 10-1 against Jeskai Saheeli, and then like, you know, X-2 against everything else, right? So like, if you're gonna play, like, if you're gonna make the argument that there are the decks you can play, they at least have to be able to beat up on those other decks. And I don't think I'm convinced that anything does have a good matchup on it.
Oh, definitely. If that's the argument, definitely not.
You mentioned control. I don't think control is bad because of Teferi. Like, you could play around Teferi or play, you know, your Murderous Riders, whatever, to do it. I think the problem is that they have no way to close games where your opponent has Field of the Dead.
Yeah, exactly.
They just don't. They don't have. Doesn't matter what your win condition would be, if it's Lochmere Serpent or if it's Planeswalkers. Like, you do not have an actual way to stem the tide of zombies. Right.
You don't win the late game,
right?
And you should.
So again, I don't think it has anything to do with counter magic. I think it has all to do 100% with that. And I think the opposite is true for the aggressive decks. You know, you don't have. Again, you don't have all of the pieces. You know, that's why a lot of those red decks were going to Cavalcade, because you needed something to make your deck feel powerful. But of course, that's a lie, because then you're playing a bunch of X1s. I mean, it just is. Like, you're just playing like a bunch of ginger brutes, and you're like, ha ha ha, it's like, this is cool. I'm going to make you have to eat those. Like, that's what's going to happen. It's like, I'm glad you brought cookies.
Yeah, that actually sounds great to me. I don't know.
So I think, like, you know, we probably should be patient and hope that, like, you know, give play design the chance to know that there are holes. But I'm really worried by the huge holes that are here. Like, making one of your most powerful cards in all of standard be a land, and then not giving people a good way to interact with that land is frustrating. I think, like, I'm looking at cards even like Kendra's Transformation, and I know that, like, Mark Rosewater was not a fan of that card because it's a color break, but, like, man, why can't that just target lands? Like, we already had Dryads, or what is it, Dryads?
Yeah, something. Yeah, yeah.
The one that made it a 3/3, whatever. You could, but you can enchant a permanent and made it a forest. You know, maybe that should just be able to target a land. You know what I mean? But, and maybe that's gross because, like, you can't play that in turn two and target a land. Like, that's the problem with, like, things that can target lands. Maybe you should have considered something like a Beast Within. You know what I mean? I know they've tried to shy away from this, but you can't. I don't know. I know you're afraid of powerful things that interact with your lands, but then you went and made a land too powerful. And it doesn't. I don't think it really matters what the rest of the format is doing. Yeah, Fire as an Invention is very, very good. It can be punished and exploited.
Yes.
Like, it certainly can be punished and exploited. But it can't be when its backup plan, like, literally its backup plan is still better than half the decks. Like, I can play Flyers, but also play Field of the Dead and never be punished for it. And that's, I don't know. I think it puts us in a bad place.
Definitely.
So I don't know if that means, like, you ban something because you're never that far away from something new and standard, but I hope the format's able to shake out of this and show me something, because if not, then Field of the Dead's going to have just a big target on it. Like, why do you exist?
Yeah.
Why do you exist in this format where you didn't give us any way to interact with it effectively?
Yeah. Why they didn't sneak in, like, Field of Ruin in either core set or in this set. It's like,
I mean, even like Encroaching Waste was the one they tried before.
Yeah.
Tectonic Edge.
Tech Edge would be good.
It would be great
in this format.
You know, I don't see, again, they put a cycle of castles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted, you know, they made them non-legendary. They wanted people to play them, but that feels short-sighted now.
Yeah, sure. Because they, like, people are playing them, but again, the best land is not them.
You can make some flavorful thing in Thrones of Eldraine too that destroys lands, because it's all about, like, castles and kingdoms and fiefdom and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so I don't know.
100%. It's not hard.
Kind of lazy.
I don't know if it's ultimately lazy. I think it's purposeful, because you want these things to see play. But that's what play design is supposed to fix.
That's what I'm saying. I think just, like, the oversight here is lazy.
Sure, okay. I get what you're saying.
I get why they would make that decision, but then to not go the next step of going, what else does that fix? It seems like a classic problem.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah, you want to be able to punish, like, those big mana decks in some way, whether that's through countering their big spell, whether that's through killing them before they can get online or interacting with their plan. And we just don't have all those elements. So, like, the big mana deck's going to do what the big mana deck's going to do. Like, if modern didn't have, like...
Big mana deck energy.
All right, yeah, Joe Buck, what a great commentary.
So, like, look at modern. So, like,
are you allowed to do that?
I know, I like him.
Yeah. So, like, look at Tron and modern. If you didn't have ways to interact with Tron,
yeah,
like, Tron would just be the best deck, right? Like, yeah, if you didn't have a way to destroy lands or Thoughtseize them do something to interact with them, like, people would just play Tron. Yeah. Maybe be a bunch of Tron mirrors, but you can interact with that deck.
Nah.
So that's what keeps it in check. Once you're saying, like, you have all the mana in the world, all your colors are fixed, and you can do everything,
He's talking about standard now, and no one can stop you.
Like, why not be doing that?
Yeah, it's like, standard, leave me alone. Every other deck is like struggling to be two colors, maybe, and all these Golos decks are like
easy
what
five.
What are you guys doing?
I get to literally splash a color or all the colors for free.
Activate this Wooburg activated ability.
I have a copy of each type of basic land in here, kind of just for fun. So
just cause.
You know how I did my Wooburg ability a second ago? I'm gonna do it again right now too, just because I can.
Like, literally. Yeah, that's
what a joke.
Who knows? I think
this is more like the classic and less like the open.
Hopefully. I bet the Mythic Championship is still happening, right? We still have one more of those, or those done?
No, Mythic Championship is not this weekend, but next.
Next weekend. That's standard.
The 19th. It's the same week. That's why we have regionals.
Yeah.
Is it like the arena one, or is it the
arena one. They gave a whole press release for that with all the players and stuff, but I figured we'd talk about that next week since it...
So, that's standard, obviously. It's gonna be Golos decks. Like, I don't know how to tell you. They should just make it Brawl, and announce that, and then there you go. That's how you get diversity.
One, please stop. I can't take the thought of a Brawl Players Tour or whatever. Like, I need it now. I need it. Thank you. But two, like, maybe the one thing that was nice about, granted that maybe I'm thinking more of the Mythic Invitational than this, but like, the list of challengers last time, the MPL is going to the MPL and they're going to play Golos, and this is how it's going to be. But the challengers did bring a lot of interesting decks last time, and I think hopefully coverage will know to highlight that.
You can only do it for so long, though, too.
Well, thus making the MPL even more irrelevant than it is now. Ooh, awkward. But we don't want to watch the MPL because they played boring good decks. Let me see the trash.
Give us the trash.
The MPL's so weird to me.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Like you're not wrong. If you want to come...
watched every episode of the Vintage Super League. I love that kind of format. And I don't care about this.
You literally go out of your way to watch Uncle Randy.
Right. I mean, I watched the first four seasons, every episode, all the time.
But then Cedric's like, look, here I am doing MPL. And you're like, no, that's cool. See you later, Cedric.
Exactly.
And like, that
feels
wrong.
He's the best commentator in our business, but you can't make me care about it.
Yeah, like, here's the thing. I could pull up like old NFL like videos and then commentate them. And you might even like that. The sound of my voice and be like, but like, I know I don't care about that game.
Yeah, like, it doesn't matter to me anymore.
And like, it's not happening like live. And it's like, well, it already happened, but why is that less exciting? I don't know, but it is.
Yeah, right.
So
their
decks have been locked in for like a long time, and I didn't care about them then, so I don't care about them now. Right.
Yeah, I don't. Anyway, that's a long.
I'm not saying
thing,
I have a good answer. It's just an answer.
That's the thing. Like, I feel like one of the things like at my job is always like if you're going to criticize, right?
Come up with a solution.
Have a solution, right? Like, sure. Like, because everyone can complain. Have a solution. Watson, I don't have one. I want the MPL to exist. I'm glad it does. MPL split's bad. And I don't have a solution for you, but there you go.
I mean, look at what how do you do what League of Legends does in Magic? Like, I care about that, and I've played maybe 4 minutes of that game in my life.
It's Worlds right now. Have something that you can watch where you actually are following something on the screen as opposed to a lot of like non-motion on Arena for a long time.
Hearthstone, though, their leagues matter.
Do they? I thought Hearthstone's really had an issue with
their
like,
tournaments matter.
Hearthstone's having a lot of problems.
They just
been
did
a part of the
bad.
Discourse.
They just did a big bad, didn't they?
Blizzard just
did a real big bad.
Blizzard did a real big bad.
Blizzard in the NBA doing that muscly arm meme for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it's no good. It's no good. I would, my personal opinion, if you're a fan of Hearthstone, I would reconsider giving money to that organization.
Yeah,
my opinion.
Yeah, I was gonna buy Overwatch for Switch. I think I'm gonna hold off on that for a little bit.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Hey, it's almost like people should have like civil rights. Hey, hot take.
Weird.
Hot take. Oh, we're gonna lose all our Chinese downloads now.
Oh.
Them firing the casters was really weird.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't agree, but I get the decision to, like, I get what they were thinking.
But it's like they just, like, packed their bags and moved away.
Yeah, like, there's, like, actually, but you guys, you interviewed them, you're fired. Like, whoa, man.
So, like here's the thing, and, like, a lot of, with, you know, things that have been going on in the culture that exists, a lot of companies have been, like, trying to, like, proactively get ahead of, like, bad situations that could happen, and, like, this is a direct action to no reaction, right? Like, so if you don't know this, there was a Hong Kong pro that won a large Hearthstone tournament, had a during the speech that he gave a very pro Hong Kong democracy,
used his platform against China.
Pro protesters.
Yes, pro protesters,
right.
Correct.
China's not big on that right now.
No, they're not.
No, they aren't. So he was, for this, he was banned from Hearthstone. His prize money was rescinded, was taken away. And then you said they fired the casters? They
fired the casters,
for
too,
some reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the one that you're just like, wait,
then
why,
they
though?
Went to the venue and they lit it on fire.
But, yeah, it's the weirdest thing.
I mean, we just saw this in the NBA, too, where a GM for the Houston Rockets.
Oh, yeah.
In support of the Hong Kong protesters as well. And now China is, like, canceling a bunch of, like they're canceling their coverage of a bunch of NBA games in China.
Well, that guy's on the board of, like, some Chinese basketball association, too, and, like, is really involved in the government. And,
Is Adam Silver, is that who it is? Something Silver, I don't know. But he they tried to play both ends where, like, they wanted to apologize to, like, China, but also be like, well, we have free speech here. And it's like, but then why did you apologize?
Fight tyranny.
Wherever it exists.
This is not what our podcast normally does, but I will say, not at all. If you want to understand how sometimes capitalism can be bad, watch the companies that want to make money, like, bow down to the country with, like, a horrible, like, history and human rights. Like, they're like, oh, we're really sorry.
But we manipulate currency, so we're going to make you a lot of money.
It's not good. It's not a good look.
This isn't an NPR podcast, but, like,
hey, let's lick some boots.
You should really...
But so,
I mean, what are we doing, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You have the money. I want the money. We apologize.
Yeah.
Keep treating people awfully. Keep trying to deny people.
Cancel
the right.
Cancel your WoW Classic subscription, folks. Like, you should just not.
And so it is important because we have a very prominent pro who is from Hong Kong. We have, I know his handle is Lee Arson, but it's Li Shi Tian.
Yeah, Li Shi Tian.
Mm-hmm. So, like, it is relevant for a very prominent person within our Magic community. And you know, you should definitely be. If you are a fan of Magic and a fan of, you know, Li Shi Tian specifically, you should definitely be involved in what's going on in his hometown, you know, his place of origin.
Hey, his hometown, Hong Kong.
his place of origin, you know what I mean? Because
my hometown of Ohio.
But, this is something where I really do hope that the WotC is in Hasbro, I guess, is taking a look at this.
Just like have somebody furiously scribbling notes, like, okay, don't do that, okay?
Well, yeah, but who knows if they are? Like, I don't know. What I think is going to likely happen is Li Shi Tian will not have very much
chance to speak. Is that
correct,
what you're suggesting?
Correct. That is 100% what I'm suggesting.
That is not the yikes. That's a huge yikes. I don't know how you would ever check that, but I don't.
But you know.
Yeah, if he's like X and O through late in day one, and they haven't did a deck tech with him, and you're like, I bet it's going to say because I built my sideboard with the idea of fighting tyranny in mind. You know, like, yeah.
They used to not have sideboards here. We didn't do best of three, but I protested that, and it was effective.
So as if we all make our voices heard.
I do think we should be careful here because I don't want to assume any sort of the politics or
no, not at
like,
all.
This is a much more nuanced, like, when I won't say it's that nuanced, like, China does bad things, but like, I don't want to act like I'm some sort of expert on this, but I do think, like, it's very easy to look at a big company and be like, you should probably stop silencing people because you're afraid of losing out on dollars.
They took back his money.
That's unreal.
Like, you win and then we take back your money. Hell, if I won the turn, I'd already spent it. You know,
I do wonder about that from, like, just like a legal perspective. Like,
yeah,
like, you know, when you enter some tournaments, you especially, you know, luckily Magic ones, like the agreement there is fairly cut and dry. But like some of those digital ones, like those end user agreements, do you
So
you forego a lot of rights.
Yeah, so like you just take your iTunes account, for example. You don't own any of that.
Right.
You can't like bequeath it to anybody. Like when you die, iTunes gets all the stuff back, and they could honestly take it back whenever they wanted. The Hearthstone contracts, this is just a guy on Reddit, but he was saying that like the contracts basically said it's a disqualifiable offense to make Activision Blizzard look bad.
Yeah, and they can decide what that means.
Right, which is pretty rough. I mean, like, if they sued here in America, right, it would be construed against Activision Blizzard. Like, what does look bad mean? Like, does it really make Blizzard look bad that I attacked my, like, tyrannical overlord?
Yeah, but don't they have to just show, like, monetary losses?
I mean, it depends on what the contract's worded. That's really specific. But, yeah, like, does monetary losses, maybe their owner's a giant homophobe, but it gets them a lot of money to come out and support gay rights. So, like, he thinks it makes them look bad, but they made money.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Super ambiguous.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's...
So, like... You know, it would be construed against them in, like, court, but I know that the actual language is difficult, but it's super gray, and, like...
It's certainly not in that poor gentleman's favor. And,
no, right, it's definitely not, and, like, you know, good for him to use this platform anyway.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah, so... I know we went off on a weird tangent there. I think that's some important stuff, because like it definitely does affect, it will and can and should affect our game. You know, mm-hmm. WotC has tried to push into very specific business deals. They want to push into the Chinese market. And I don't blame any company for wanting to push into a large economic market. Like, that's what you do as a company.
People there, right?
Yeah, like that's what you do as a company. But, you know, you have to be prepared to either make ethical decisions at the cost of money, or look at your consumer base in the eye and go, we don't care. We want the money. And that's what Blizzard's done, and that's what the NBA has done.
So that's definitely – we definitely have to make sure it's Blizzard Activision, right?
Yes. Blizzard Activision. Blizzard Activision. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Which is – yeah.
I think historically, like, you can probably look at Blizzard and be like, they may have been a company with some moral fiber, but
– back before buyout. Yeah.
But nah.
Isn't it interesting that we do that, though? Like, we don't always say, Wizards of the Coast Hasbro.
No. But that's not what their brand technically
no,
is.
But I do think it's interesting that, like it does change your connotation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because Wizards of the Coast still sounds like this small indie company
out
of Seattle.
Yeah.
You're Hasbro, and you're like, ah, never mind.
And that's the same with Blizzard, too. And I do that. I just say Blizzard. But, yeah, it is Blizzard Activision. Yeah. So, hey, maybe don't play COD Mobile.
Hey, maybe don't buy the next Call of Duty.
Hey, you know what you should do? You should vote for leaders that don't support tyrannical governments.
That's true, too.
So,
hey, if you wanted to buy Call of Duty, you could just give that to our Patreon. Morgan, close the show.
Okay. So there, we didn't talk about a couple other tournaments. We didn't talk about the Modern Classic or the Phantom Legends thing, but...
Phantom Legends was more of the same.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
And Modern Classic...
It really was.
Golos
the week before, you had, like, Dance the Mance and stuff, but...
Just all Golos decks now. Yeah.
Golos and Green White Adventures.
So, coming up for this week, we have GP Utrecht and GP Bangkok. Is that correct?
Yes, I did look those up today.
And then it's Star City Games Indy this weekend for Modern. You wrote Philly on here, so.
Oh, that's my bad.
Trying to set me up for failure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Either you guys going?
I'm not. No. I have a charity softball thing on Sunday.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I won't be in attendance. Nice. Nice,
James.
God bless it.
They're just just draining some buckets over here. Don't worry.
No, somebody did, but it wasn't me.
Yep.
Yeah, Mike did.
That's right. It was me.
But thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you are listening to us via a podcast platform that you can leave a rating or review for, please do so. We really feel that we're a 5-star podcast. If you want to reach out to us, you can through multiple methods. We have a Twitter. It's your NSTEP is the handle. When you add us, it's at your NSTEP. We have email at your NSTEP at gmail.com. And then we have Facebook, facebook.com/@yournstep. Thank you so much to our sponsor, Comic Town. Again, check out worldofcomictown.com, and you can find out more information about the upcoming regionals tournament there as well. And they also have a Facebook, facebook.com/comictown. Thank you again to our patrons. Again, our Patreon is patreon.com/@yournstep. And that's going to be everything for us this week. Jordan, thank you again for coming out and being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It was fun.
Yeah, of course.
Anytime.
You're welcome anytime.
Oh, man.
But that's going to be everything for us this week, and we'll catch you next time. Have a great one, and bye.